Justice Society presents JSA in the 90s, episode number 0. Hello, and welcome to the inaugural episode of JSA in the 90s, a new monthly podcast, and a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. My name's the Iridamel Shag, and I'll be your host for each episode. Now, the first thing I want to say is welcome to the JSA Brownstone, and thank you for downloading this episode and giving this podcast a try. I know there's lots of other JSA-themed podcasts out there, and I hope you'll enjoy this one too. Now, as I mentioned, I'll be your guide for each episode of JSA in the 90s, and in most cases, I won't be doing it alone. Each episode will be joined by a fellow JSA fan from an ever-changing roster of guest hosts, so you'll get to hear from tons of other JSA fans across the lifespan of this podcast. For example, next episode, we'll have a guest, and we'll begin our JSA coverage by talking about Justice Society of America number 1 from 1992. And I am so excited to start talking about these comics. But for this episode, I wanted to explain like what we're doing here, right? So I'm on my own this time, and I'm going to share the mission of this podcast series and what to expect. I'm going to share my own personal history of the JSA and discuss why I think the 1990s was a great decade for the team. So this episode is like a course syllabus you'd receive on your first day of class. You know, normally we're not going to start with this kind of preamble, but since this is the first episode, I should probably explain the plan. Also, this is going to take a while, so I want to cover all this in a separate episode so that next month we can jump right into issue number 1 coverage. Now, you may have noticed I titled this episode number 0 because I just couldn't resist since this show's all about comics from the 1990s, right? Now, I know there was never a Justice Society of America issue number 0, but it's super fun and I don't know, just it made me laugh, so there we go. All right, so the first big topic of the discussion of this episode is going to be, what will this podcast cover? Well, really, any JSA-related comic published in the 1990s is fair game. But the bulk of our coverage is going to be discussing a single issue each month of the two different JSA titles from the early 1990s. So we're going to start with the Justice Society of America ongoing series that lasted 10 issues and was published from 1992 to 1993. And that book was written by Len Strazewski with art by Mike Parabek and Mike Macklin. Now, those issues focused on the JSA returning to our world in the 1990s after escaping the Battle of Ragnarok. And now that they're back on Earth, they kind of have to find their place in the world as superheroes and as senior citizens. Now, after we finish those, we'll start covering the 8-issue miniseries that was published in 1991. Now, that miniseries was also written by Len Strazewski, but with art by Rick Burchett, Grant Meum, Mike Parabek, and Tom Artis. And that story takes place in the 1950s, and it's about the JSA reuniting to battle these living constellations and an old enemy. That miniseries is often called Vengeance from the Stars, though it was actually collected recently, and that collection was entitled Justice Society of America, The Demise of Justice. Now, if you were paying attention, you may have noticed I just described those two series out of publication order. Yes, I'm going to be covering the 1992 ongoing series first, and then the 1991 miniseries. And why am I doing that? For the incredibly scientific reason of, because I want to. And mainly it's because I love the 1992 series and the Mike Parabek art, and I want to cover them as soon as possible. And really, if you think about it from like a story perspective, the two series have nothing to do with each other. So it doesn't really matter which series gets covered first. For both series, we'll go issue by issue, covering one issue per episode. So that's about 18 episodes right there. And beyond those 18 episodes, I've also planned several episodes I'm calling Spotlight Episodes. And in these, we're going to focus on a single JSA character and discuss, you know, what they were up to across the 1990s. I'll give you an example. Like, I'm planning a Spotlight episode on Alan Scott Green Lantern. And in that single episode, we'll chat about like when he changed his superhero name from Green Lantern to Sentinel. Then at kind of like a really high level, we'll discuss lots of comics, like his ongoing feature in Green Lantern Quarterly. And then when he showed up in the monthly Green Lantern book, whether it was, you know, the issues with Hal or the issues with Kyle. And then the miniseries Green Lantern Sentinel, Heart of Darkness, his time with Sentinels of Magic, Underworld Unleashed, and all kinds of stuff in the 1990s. And I've got a spotlight episode in mind pretty much for most of the major JSA characters. And finally, I've got ideas for like other special episodes as well. Like I got a holiday-themed episode in mind in December, you know, stuff like that. So you may be wondering, what happens after we exhaust all this 1990s content, right? And that's a good question. And I'm going to answer that in kind of like a roundabout way. So I'll get there. Just stick with me for a second. Now, you may have noticed that this show does not have its own podcast feed. Instead, you subscribe to the Justice Society Presents podcast feed. And there's a reason for that. The Justice Society podcast is our anthology podcast feed featuring a variety of shows and hosts celebrating some of our favorite comics and characters associated with the JSA or the Golden Age, Earth 2, and all that. And prior to this episode that you're listening to right now, there are 14 previous episodes covering various JSA topics on the Justice Society Presents feed. So you might want to give them a try. You might enjoy them. And by hosting JSA in the 90s here on the Justice Society Presents podcast feed, it gives us a lot more flexibility. So now, after that roundabout description here, going back to the earlier question, what happens when we exhaust all the 1990s material? Because there is a finite amount of material, this JSA in the 90s podcast won't last forever. For all those episodes I just mentioned a moment ago, I've kind of mapped them out. And with a monthly show, we should get through all of those within 2 to 3 years. I know. I don't want this show to end either. But here's the good news. Once we finish up the JSA in the 90s content, this show will transform into JSA in the 2000s. And on that show, we'll focus on the amazing JSA series that lasted 87 issues by Jeff Johns and many other talented folks. Plus, we'll uncover a whole bunch of hidden gems from the 2000s. So between JSA in the 90s and JSA in the 2000s, I've easily got 5 to 6 years worth of content to cover. So this show's not going anywhere for quite a while. Now, if this is your first time listening to one of my shows, I should probably take a minute to address my style of podcasting. Here at the Firewater Podcast Network, we have a mantra of sorts that we say, find your joy, which means we like to find stuff that we enjoy, talk about it, and focus on the positive aspects and celebrate those things. We don't typically pick topics to talk about just to be negative and tear them apart. We want to encourage positivity in our fandom and celebrate the things we love. Certainly there are aspects of the 84-year history of the JSA that each of us as fans don't like, right? We don't have to love everything. And the easy solution for me, though, is I just don't spend a lot of time talking about those things that I don't enjoy. I mean, those things exist, and some people love them, and some people hate them, and that's okay. I'm just not going to expend a bunch of my energy to create a podcast where I complain all the time. That's not fun to me, and that just breeds negativity. So instead, I'm going to focus on the JSA stories that I enjoy. Now, with that said, I don't want you to think I'm going to be like some Pollyanna that calls everything wonderful and rainbows. No, not at all. If something in these stories that I'm covering isn't good, maybe it's something in the story or the art or whatever, I'm going to call those things out. We'll address those things we don't like, but then we're going to move on past it rather than dwell upon them. The goal here is to find our JSA joy together. All right, so let's move on to our second big topic of the discussion for this episode, which is my personal history with the JSA. Now, I'm going to tell you my origin with the JSA, right? But I want to hear yours too. So go out to our website, which is firewaterpodcast.com/JSA Presents. Find this episode, or if you're listening to this months from now, find the current episode, and share your own history with the JSA. How'd you find the team? What made you fall in love? By sharing your thoughts, we can begin to build a community of JSA fans around the show. So, all right, my very first exposure to the JSA, I was 7 years old, and it was 1979. We had just moved from Michigan to Florida. Now, that's a huge adjustment for a little kid, right? I lost all my friends. I had to start a new school. I honestly don't remember much of the details, but it was probably, I imagine, a tough time for a kid. And one day around this time, in late 1979, a comic book just strangely materialized on our back porch with a note addressed to me saying, "From a secret admirer." Now, at 7 years old, I had no idea what to make of this whole secret admirer thing, but I was thrilled to have a comic book to read, right? So, and I did find out, days later, I don't know, maybe it's weeks, I really don't remember, but I did find out the secret admirer was my sister, who was 3 years older than me. So the comic that she left me was Justice League of America number 171. Now, I grew up watching Super Friends, and I'd read a couple of superhero comics, not a whole bunch, but a few. So I knew the basic characters of the Justice League, from the Super Friends. But this was a JLA-JSA crossover issue, specifically the one where Mr. Terrific dies. Sorry about that. Should have warned you. Spoilers for a 45-year-old comic book. So I read the comic, and, parallel worlds, Earth 2, my mind was blown, right? The issue featured two different people called Green Lantern. One was blonde and looked nothing like the guy in the Super Friends. There were two different people called the Flash, and one wore an old military helmet and you could see his face. And there were two different people called Hawkman. You know, then we find out there's this other Batman who's dead, and here's his adult-aged daughter called Huntress. So this is a lot for a 7-year-old kid to take in. But I loved this comic. I reread it tons of times. So the JSA was burned into my comic reading DNA at a very early age. And I always remember this comic fondly. And the funny thing is, I only owned the one issue, right? So I think it was like 10 or 15 years before I ever got part two of the story and found out who killed Mr. Terrific. Plus, this being my very first JSA comic, it really gave me an overinflated sense of importance for Mr. Terrific as part of the JSA. I mean, I thought, wow, this guy, Mr. Terrific, he must be like a really big deal in the JSA. Well, obviously, not so much. So, now let's go back to the secret admirer part of my story. So, I have no idea what possessed my 10-year-old sister to give me this generous gift, right? She did this at least one other time, I know, with like another comic as well. You know, maybe she felt sorry for me because maybe I was having a hard time making new friends. Or maybe it was just a whim on her part. I really don't know. I'm just guessing here. But it was incredibly kind of her. And the gift of comics, you know, it really meant a lot to me. And then, this is the sad part, tragically, my sister was killed in a car accident less than 6 years after she gave me that comic. So I think that's another reason this particular comic has always been so special to me. I don't have a lot of memories of my sister, but I'll always have this one. And it's a happy memory, and I'll always cherish it. Okay, so let's fast forward, right? The years go by, and now it's 1984. And I had, by that point, started collecting superhero comics on a regular basis. I started with Marvel, but eventually I became more of a DC reader. My next memorable interaction with the JSA was in 1985. I started buying Crisis on Infinite Earths. Unfortunately, I was late to the party. I started with issues 6 and 8, which was leaping right in the middle of the story, right? And here was the JSA. I was like, oh my gosh, it's the team from the JLA comic I read all those years ago, right? From the Parallel Worlds. So I knew a whole bunch of them. But there were so many other Parallel Worlds in Crisis, right? I kept these little handwritten lists and more lists and more lists of each Earth and where to find each hero, just so I could keep it all straight. You know, Crisis was huge in scope, and I started in the middle. So it was incredibly confusing, but I loved it. Now that same month I started buying Crisis, I also started picking up the second miniseries for Superpowers, you know, which was that comic based on the toy line. And this was specifically the second miniseries, the one that was drawn by Jack Kirby that included that whole second wave of characters, including Dr. Fate. So here he was again. There's this JSA guy, and he looks so cool, right? That helmet and everything. And I was beginning to understand the whole parallel world concept better. So I was pretty confused why Dr. Fate was hanging out with everyone from Earth 1, but, you know, whatever. Then, you know, let's, again, go a little bit later. I started buying the JLA comics on a regular basis. I started with the Justice League Detroit era, and then I bought a whole ton of back issues. And I started specifically with the Crisis on Earth Prime issues, because I thought those covers looked so cool. Right, and this also got me to buy a couple issues of All-Star Squadron. So I absolutely loved that crossover, and I still do to this day. So by that time, you know, I'm pretty familiar with the JSA concept. And I thought it was pretty cool, pretty interesting. But it didn't go beyond that much. So then we get to 1990, and I'm aged 18, and it all finally clicked for me. I was reading the Dr. Fate ongoing series by J.M. DeMatteis and Sean McManus, which is so good, by the way. And I really like Dr. Fate ever since that Superpowers miniseries. So I started digging through my local comic shop, had these 50-cent bins. So I found all the 1970s All-Star Comics revival. And this is where I became a lifelong JSA fan. And I think part of what made me love them was it was the first time I'd ever read a JSA book where they were the stars. They were not guest stars. It was their world, and they were the celebrity heroes here, and these were their adventures. And I just loved it. In fact, I loved it so much, when I eventually got online in the mid-1990s, my handle on the DC Comics message board, my first handle was Super Squad. So clearly, I was quite enamored with those 70s books. So I continued to buy anything out of the 50-cent bins I could find that was related to the JSA. I bought old issues of All-Star Squadron and Young All-Stars. I knew all about what happened in the last days of the JSA and, you know, why they weren't around anymore. And at that point, I was dying for anything JSA. So I was thrilled when a new comic came out, not just a 50-cent bin, but one of the new ones on the stand that featured a connection to the JSA. And I'm talking about specifically Roger Stern's Will Payton Starman series. And in issue 26, they introduced Ted Knight's son, a guy named David, who become pretty important down the line. So I was so excited to see the JSA represented in a new comic. So I went nuts, I bought it, I lived it. And then I was over the moon a year later when DC launched the new JSA miniseries. And then, of course, they freed the JSA from limbo, and then they launched the ongoing series that lasted 10 issues that we're going to start talking about next month. It was an exciting time to become a JSA fan, and I have been ever since. Now, sort of kind of to wrap up my personal history, moving away from comics, I pretty much already given you my age, but I'm not going to say it out loud because it makes me feel really old, right? But instead, I'll tell you a little history about my activities online. So I started dabbling with podcasting back in 2005, and I cannot believe that was 19 years ago. That is so disturbing. But and at that time, I did some various bits as like a panelist and guest and things like that. But eventually, I kind of wanted to build sort of my own online presence for myself. So in 2008, I started blogging. And at first, I was blogging on my site called Once Upon a Geek, which I do a podcast by the same name nowadays. But from there, with that blog, I wanted to start blogging about a specific comic book niche. And here's how it all comes back to the JSA. I wanted to start a blog dedicated to the JSA. I mean, I really, really wanted it. That's where my passion was. But I felt that there were already too many. I felt like I was just going to get lost in a sea of JSA blogs. So instead, I filled the Firestorm-shaped hole that existed on the World Wide Web. You know, Firestorm, he's one of my favorite characters, and he really was not represented much on the internet at the time. So I kind of carved out this niche for myself blogging about the character, and I became Firestorm fan. And the Firestorm blog, it did pretty well. I was very proud of it. And I met a whole bunch of other comic book fans online. And that led to the year 2011, when Rob Kelly from the Aquaman Shrine blog, he reached out to me about possibly podcasting together. And thus was born the Fire and Water podcast, all about Firestorm and Aquaman. And from there it grew, and we were extremely lucky to build up this large community of fellow comic book fans around the podcast, and eventually it grew into a podcasting network with several different hosts and dozens of different shows. Now, for the past 8.5 years, I've been podcasting every month covering the Justice League International Bwahaha era, written by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. And I am incredibly proud of that show. I really am. And just this month, I finally completed my mission after 8.5 years of covering all of the Giffen and DeMatteis JLI comics. It was a lot of work, but I loved it, right? And as I said, I'm very proud. And with the JLI show done, it's freed me up now to start podcasting about the JSA on a monthly basis. And I've been so anxious to get started, right? I actually announced this show on social media 20 months ago. I looked it up. Some folks have been waiting a long time for this show. So really, if you look at the whole origin I just gave you, the origin of this JSA podcast can be traced all the way back to my decision to blog about Firestorm. However, somewhere out there in the multiverse, you know, because Earth 1, Earth 2, and all that, right? There's a world where instead I started blogging about the JSA like I originally wanted to. And who knows? Maybe I would have started my podcasting career out there talking about the JSA instead of Firestorm. I don't know, Earth 37 or something, whatever. All right, woof. All right, so I've been talking for a while. So let's go ahead and take a quick podcast promo break where I am going to play a couple of commercials for other podcasts. And when we return, I'm going to tell you why I love the JSA. And I'm going to share some controversial opinions that you just might not like. Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe.
Spanning from the first issue of Who's Who in 1985 all the way through the Loose Leaf edition.
Including all the updates, the spinoffs, custom Who's Who pages for forgotten characters, and tons of in-depth character spotlights.
Entries span from the golden age of DC
and into the extreme 1990s.
Covering characters such as Superman by Kurt Swan and John Byrne.
The Justice League by Kevin Maguire.
Batman by Dick Giordano.
The New Titans by Tom Grummett.
Wonder Woman by George Perez.
The Legion of Superheroes by Keith Giffen.
The Flash by Carmine Infantino.
Lobo by Simon Bisley.
The All-Star Squadron by Jerry Ordway.
Firestorm by Al Milgrom.
Aquaman by Chuck Patton.
So many entries talking about Ian Carcool.
The Forever People again and again and again.
And hundreds of other characters found in Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe.
Available wherever you find podcasts and at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Nuclear Man, Batman, Hawkman,
2D Man, and Hour Man. Who are all these people, man?
They're all part of the DC Who's Who.
Welcome back. Now we're going to get started with another big topic of discussion for this episode, which is, why do I love the JSA? Well, I'm not entirely sure I can articulate it into words. I'm hoping this podcast series will help me find the words to express myself properly over time. I can tell you off the top of my head some of the things I love about the JSA. In a lot of ways, I feel like the JSA are a bunch of unknowns compared to the Justice League. You know, I was raised on the Super Friends, right? So the heroes of the JLA have pretty much been there my entire life. And everyone knows these characters, right? All the Super Friends, Justice League characters, everyone knows them. But here we have the JSA, who are so much like the heroes of the JLA, but slightly adjacent, right? Like, and don't worry, I do realize the JSA came first. But to a kid who grew up on the League, you know, the JSA feels like an alternate version, like something askew. And for years, only the hardcore fans cared about these JLA adjacent characters. So it was kind of a cool feeling, like we were cheering for the underdogs. Now, another major component of why I love the JSA is that I love the legacy of these heroes, especially with them as the elder statesmen and stateswomen of the DC Universe. I love seeing them mentor the next generation of heroes and watch that next generation take on the JSA mantle. You know, in the 1980s, we had the sons and daughters of the JSA forming Infinity Inc. And then, since we're talking about the 90s, we'll see a little bit more of that in this Mike Parabek, Len Straczynski JSA series. You know, the JSA there are now senior citizens and trying to figure out their place in the world. And part of what they realize is they need to set an example for the next generation of heroes. And we get to meet some legacy characters. We meet Jesse Quick, you know, who's a legacy to Johnny Quick. And we meet Kiku Thunder, who's a legacy to Johnny Thunder. Sadly, we don't really see Kiku out of the side of this series again, but she was an interesting character and had a lot of potential. Then we fast forward to Mark Waid's Flash book, and man, I love that comic so much. I mean, this is one of my favorites throughout the 1990s, and he really pushed the concept of the legacy of these heroes. And then James Robinson, right, he comes right behind him and took the JSA legacy concept to a new level with Starman. And then into the 2000s, we saw what I consider to be the greatest expression of the JSA legacy with the all-new JSA series by James Robinson, David S. Goyer, and eventually Jeff Johns. And I'll put it right out there, folks. In my opinion, I think the 2000s JSA series is the best superhero team book of the 2000s, hands down, and the best JSA book ever. Now, and when I say that, I realize your opinion it might be different from mine, and that's okay. Right? Because the beauty of the JSA is that there's 84 years of history to pick from and room for all kinds of fans, you know? There are Golden Age purists who think the team should never be different than it was in the 1940s. And you know what? There's room for them in the JSA fandom. So pull up a chair. You know, maybe you love the 1970s Super Squad with all the Earth 1, Earth 2 hijinks. Or you think the JSA characters peaked in the 1980s with All-Star Squadron. Well, come on. You're in the club of JSA fandom too. Maybe your favorite JSA is from the New 52, the Earth 2 series. And hey, that's not my thing, but your fandom is equally as valid and you're part of the family too. And believe me, there's no judgment from me here. I am a series of contradictions unto myself, right? You know, the era of DC Comics where I was most invested was post-Crisis. So I'm a post-Crisis guy, but I love some of the classic JSA stuff from the Golden, Silver, and Bronze Ages. But I also like a completely nonsensical mishmash of stuff. For example, I like Helena Wayne in the 1970s, and I like her with the JSA in the 70s. But not all the various attempts to bring her back after Crisis that they've done. You know, once you get to the 1980s, I prefer my Huntress to be Helena Bertinelli. And I really, really like the Earth 2 Robin, and I love those 1970s Super Squad stories, right? But I also like Dick Grayson as Nightwing. I love the Earth 2 Superman and the Earth 2 Batman, but I don't like them as part of the JSA. I just don't like it. I like them independently, not with the JSA. I prefer the post-Crisis origin without him. And even though I just said I don't like the Earth 2 Superman as part of the JSA, I really, really like Power Girl with the JSA. I think that's where she belongs. I mean, and that's a complete contradiction. Also, I like Wonder Woman as part of the JSA, but not the Golden Age version. I specifically like the Hippolyta retcon, or even the more recent idea that Diana's just been alive for a long time, and she was part of the JSA in World War II, and now part of the JLA. So I have my own favorite JSA stuff, and it's all a contradicting mess. And that's all to say, everyone can love what they love. Mix and match various eras of the JSA, and there's no judgment from me. I just want us all to have a good time. And I hope throughout this JSA podcast, it's going to help me articulate into words even better why I love the JSA so much. Okay, on to the next big topic of discussion for this episode. And this one could be controversial. So I'm going to talk about why I think the JSA in the 1990s may have been better than the JSA in the 1980s. And I know you're thinking like, what? Wait. What did he just say? Yeah, I said that. I said the JSA in the 1990s may have been better than the JSA in the 1980s. Now, I know lots of people who think the JSA in the 1980s was amazing and it was peak JSA. And then the JSA were horribly mistreated after Crisis and throughout the 1990s. And I know it's a controversial opinion, but I respectfully disagree with those folks. Now, to get into this, let's first talk about the JSA in the 1980s, right? You've got the All-Star Squadron, Infinity Inc., Young All-Stars, and Secret Origins. Then you kind of got to throw in Crisis on Infinite Earths and the last days of the JSA. So you've got an explosion of JSA content, and that is awesome. And I want to make it very clear that the All-Star Squadron and Secret Origins are deep, deep, deep in my DNA. I have an enormous amount of love for those books. Young All-Stars and Infinity Inc., I like those as well, but to a lesser extent. Now, I love those comics, and I still love to think about the characters and adventures that were published in the 1980s. However, rereading some of those actual comics nowadays can be a little tough for me, especially as the series move along. It can get really, really wordy, and it can get really bogged down with trying to fix continuity holes that were perceived by Roy Thomas. Now, All-Star Squadron, that kicks it off, right? And it is a really high point, and it is a fantastic comic. But as the various JSA-related series progress, to me, I feel like it's kind of a case of diminishing returns. By the time you get to the Young All-Stars, and by the time you get to the end of that series specifically, did anyone really love that comic all the way to the end? And here's another controversial part of my theory. I think the diminishing returns in the 1980s were because it was really all just on the back of one creator, one voice for the entire decade. You know, of course, Roy Thomas. And I know lots of people say that Crisis sort of took the wind out of Roy's sails, and that's the reason for the diminishing quality. Okay, that's fair, but I ask you, should Roy have kept writing the comics if his heart wasn't in it? Now, let's play the what-if game, right? In What If for Marvel Comics is, ironically, another concept co-created by Roy Thomas, unlike Wolverine. Sorry, seriously, folks, don't send any of your hate mail to me for my jokes about Roy Thomas. I'm just goofing around here, and I'm riffing an idea, so please don't rage against me. Just go with me here. So, all right, let's go back to What If, right? So what if Roy had written All-Star Squadron, which many of us love, but then when Crisis happens, what if he stepped aside for books like Infinity Inc. and Young All-Stars and Secret Origins? What if he let other writers bring new and exciting ideas to those books? And I'm just spitballing here, but just imagine, like, if Infinity Inc. had been written by Marv Wolfman when he's firing on all thrusters, you know, cranking out those awesome Teen Titans stories. Or what if Young All-Stars had been written by Paul Levitz, you know, a guy who really understood how to write teenage superheroes. Or other creators like Roger Stern, or John Byrne, or Walt Simonson, or, you know, any number of other amazing creators that were active in the industry at the time. How different might have those books turned out? Maybe they would have found a way to maintain the excitement and energy after Crisis and after Last Days of the JSA. So I'm saying that having one voice writing the JSA throughout pretty much the entire 1980s may not have been the best choice. Sorry, so now let's contrast that with the 1990s. And I would say the diverse creators in the 1990s brought so much creativity to the JSA. And I'm not saying it was necessarily a commercial success like it was in the 80s, but it was bursting with new creative ideas. So let's talk about some of these different creator voices, right, in the 90s. So first you got Len Strazewski, kicks off the decade with the JSA miniseries and the JSA ongoing. You know, this is the very first time there is a book on the stands called Justice Society of America. That had never happened before 1991. Prior to that, it was always All-Star Comics or All-Star Squadron or whatever. Never had there been a book entitled Justice Society of America. That happened in the 1990s. Then let's look around what's going on at DC. Over there is John Ostringer and Tom Mandrake. They're revamping the Spectre. And dang, it's amazing, right? Now, in there, they also created Michael Holt, a new legacy, the new Mr. Terrific. What a fantastic character he turned out to be, right? Then, all right, let's look around again. Matt Wagner and Steven Siegel, they're giving us a completely different take on Wesley Dodds with Sam and Mystery Theater. Now, here's this mature reader's book. You know, it's dark, it's kind of scary. We've never seen a JSA member get this kind of treatment. Then Matt Wagner keeps going with John K. Schneider III, and they give us a new Dr. Midnight, Pieter Cross, another awesome legacy character and an interesting miniseries. Then, kind of bizarrely, you know, Grant Morrison and later Tom Payer give us the legacy version of Hourman, the android, And at first it's like, huh? But man, that Our Man series is one of my favorites. It is so good. Then J.M. DeMatteis, right? Bill Mester-Loebs, Keith Giffen, they're all reinterpreting Dr. Fate in several different ways throughout the 90s. You got Bo Smith. He's telling these fun adventures with Wildcat across two different miniseries, you know, Wildcat Batman and Wildcat Catwoman. Then there's Mark Waid incorporating Jay and Joan Garrick into the monthly Flash series. You know, Jay becomes an integral part of the Flash family in that run. Meanwhile, Ron Mars, you know, he's adding Alan Scott Green Lantern and his daughter Jade as supporting characters in the monthly Green Lantern series. And then you've got other new legacy heroes based on Golden Age characters like The Ray, Black Condor, Damage. And then John Byrne, he takes a stab at reworking Wonder Woman back into World War II continuity with Hippolyta or Polly. And, you know, love or hate that retcon, it was an interesting and creative idea for the JSA. Then James Robinson comes along, right, and blows our mind with the miniseries Golden Age. And then his astonishing take on Starman. And come on, that comic is unbelievably good. And at the end of the decade, Geoff Johns just getting started with his career, writing the new Star-Spangled Kid and Stripesy. I mean, we're talking about Stargirl here, right? Stargirl, who is a massive legacy character that's become insanely popular. And then just as the decade ends, I mean, just right as it ends, a brand new JSA title. And I've already said it. I think that is the best superhero team book of the 2000s. But when you look at all that cool stuff, you also got to acknowledge the not-so-great stuff from the 90s, right? I mean, there was the Firebrand series. Does anyone even remember it? You know, then there's the Fate and Book of Fate series. And, you know, it's debatable. Some people like it, some people don't. And of course, the negative consequences of Zero Hour, right? And while what happened in Zero Hour to the JSA is horrible and almost unforgivable, but what happened is all these various creators used it as a springboard for new creative ideas. Instead of letting that plot point bog everything down and run out of steam, it drove them to be more creative and even more interesting. So there you go. That's my argument for why the JSA in the 90s may have been better than the JSA in the 1980s. And all the different creative voices in the 90s pushing the JSA and the JSA legacy forward in different and interesting creative directions. All right, and folks, I know full well that I probably did not convince a single one of you that the 1990s was better for the JSA than the 1980s. And that's okay. And honestly, I don't know if I believe it myself. But it sure does make for an interesting idea to contemplate and discuss, doesn't it? All right. Now let's move on to our final topic of discussion for this episode. I want to talk about the show format. So the show format is that each episode will feature a different guest to help me cover that particular issue or topic. And I'll ask them to share their own personal origin with the JSA and why they love the team. And we'll dive into that particular comic that we're covering with like a brief summary of the story. And then we'll share our thoughts on the story and the art, you know, what we loved, maybe what we didn't. But hopefully we'll be able to focus on the best aspects of the comic. And then we'll award something I'm calling the All-Star Award. And this is where we will nominate our favorite moment from the issue. Whether it be a story beat, something in the art, something that maybe made us laugh, you know, whatever. Both myself and my guest will pick one moment each to spotlight, and those moments will each earn an All-Star Award. And also in the episode, we will take time to thank our sponsors by promoting a fun trade paperback on the InStock Trades website. Plus, we'll take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters who help make these shows possible. Because running the Fire and Water Podcast Network with so many shows, it requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched a Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying the JSA in the 90s podcast, the best way to support the show is by visiting our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FWPodcasts. And while you're there, please consider supporting the Fire and Water Podcast Network. And in certain tiers, you'll get mentioned on your show of choice. Just like these folks who asked to be recognized specifically on the Justice Society Presents podcast. Our thanks go out to Alex Osias, Bill Beer, Bruno Diaz, David Ace Gutierrez, DC Dave, Devin Clancy, George Van Note, Gord Tolton, Jason Keane, Jay Campbell, John Coos, Keechee Baker, Kevin Wetter, Mark Baker Wright, Martin Gray, Matt Ev, Maxwell Traver, Michael Bailey, Michael Crouch, Mike Zemkowski, Roger Priebe, Sean Ross, Superman Radio Revisited Podcast, Symbol Pending, Ted Kilvington, and Tim Price. Again, please consider visiting our Patreon at patreon.com/FWPodcast. And then, At the end of each episode, I'll cover your listener feedback from the previous episode in a segment called The Society Pages, which is named after the letter column in the 1992 JSA series. Now, for me, the feedback from you listeners is an incredibly critical part of the show. Plus, I'm really hoping to build a community of JSA fans around the show. So please share your thoughts on our website comment section. Just visit our website, which is firewaterpodcast.com/JSA presents, and leave your thoughts there on the appropriate episode. And I'll be sure to read your comments on the next episode. Now, if your comments are fairly lengthy, I'll at least read a portion of them. And there, you'll also get a chance to interact with other fans of the JSA, and we can really, again, build that community. And you can also find us on social media. Over on Facebook, we have a Justice Society Presents page, and we're on several other social media platforms as JSA Presents, specifically Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads. You can also send us an email at justicesocietypresents@gmail.com. Now, before we go, I also want to give a quick shout-out to some other fantastic podcasts dedicated to JSA-related content, specifically those who are friends of mine. So please consider checking out the following podcasts. A World on Fire, an all-star squadron podcast, hosted by Billy with his rotating co-hosts. Also, you can check out The Earth 2 podcast with Peter and David. There's also The Huntress podcast with AJ, Laurel, and Diane. And finally, you can check out a discontinued podcast called Tales of the JSA, which is over on the Two True Freaks podcasting network. Now, if I've forgotten any of my dear friends that are podcasting about the JSA, I sincerely apologize. Just drop me a note, and I'll be sure to mention you in the next episode. Whew, man, okay. So that was a lot to cover over the last 30 minutes or so. And I really don't like podcasting by myself. So, thankfully, for all the future episodes, I will be joined by a guest. So, that's going to do it, everyone. So come back next episode when we kick off our coverage with Justice Society of America number 1 from 1992. And I'll be joined by a fantastic guest to help me cover the issue. Who will it be? Well, you'll just have to wait and find out next episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, I'm Shag, and I'm asking you to join the fight for justice.